From the Findlay Toyota Studio, it's Cofield and Company.
Stop trying to homeschool your kids. We're going to make up the days of the back end. Like, just make sure they're alive.
You're going to wind back yes. all the advances they made this year in school.
Old shrimp in a cooler. If there's ever a tailgate motto for Vegas, that's it right there.
Relax. Like, it's okay, man. What do you say is like, friendly pictures are for friendly times. These are unfriendly times. Yeah. It's like, all right.
It's time for Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, what's up? Happy Friday to you. Cofield off for the day. We will explain at some point where he is because it sounds like just a bleak and awful place at this point. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in, Adam Candy alongside as well, and a company takeover, a great show on tap. I cannot wait. John Murray, Vegas Murray on Twitter. He's going to join us at the second hour. We have a lot to get to. There's a lot of topics that we have to cover. Are you ready? Let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
So I haven't seen you for a while, Adam. What has your life been like in quarantine? How often in quarantine? How often are you going out at this point for the necessities and that's about it or what?
I've gone fully to delivery at this point. Not even going inside the stores, you know, have the Amazon delivery drivers taking care of everything, but I kind of get the easy quarantine life. I live by myself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I already had a job where I worked from home. Not a ton changes. I got to get outside a couple times a day to remind myself there's a world out there. But, dude, just driving over here, like, it just felt foreign.
Yeah.
It felt so strange because it'd been like a week since I've been in the car.
Yep. And so I've only gone out like three times, but it's been for necessary stops, like stores, things like that. And I'm like you. You know, I'm lucky enough over at VSIN now with the setup that I can work from home. And most of my days are from home anyway, except for a two-hour foray into studio. So yesterday, I decided to go out into the world, but mainly, again, just for a stop at a convenience store. Went to the 7-Eleven down the street from my house. Had to get gas. My wife wanted a couple of things as well. So I venture into the 7-Eleven. Nice enough for the 7-Eleven, by the way. They have a nice little setup on the door with some hand sanitizer. You can sanitize right before you go in. It was empty, but, you know, the thought is what counts. And the cashier, again, nice enough, between every single guest was using hand sanitizer, like, which has to be murder on your skin, but a very nice man, very thoughtful. But you people are animals, man. I get in line, and I give the general 6 feet. You're in front of me. I'm not going to be up on you. You know what I mean? This guy gets in line behind me, and I can, like, feel his breath on my neck. He is right up on me. And I'm like, and I look back and I give him the look and I'm like, all right, I'm going to be nice. I'm just going to step forward and I'm going to, you know, create my own space here. And he steps forward. And this process continues for a couple of steps. Finally, it's my turn up at the register. I'm like, cool. This is going to be my getaway because you always give somebody room, right? At the register. You always do. It's just a general thought. So I go up there. I'm checking out. I go to get my wallet out of my pocket. And I bump into the guy. And I turn around and I'm like, can you back up? Oh, sorry. And he takes a step back. What are you guys doing? One, even if we didn't have this, right? It's just common courtesy to not breathe down my neck when I'm in line. But what are we thinking? Are you blind to what's been going on? What if I had it? And you're all up in my grill.
I don't understand why he was that concerned. Was he going to lose his place in line?
No.
Was he worried that someone might cut him at the 7-Eleven like we're going to recess? I mean, come on.
He was buying cigarettes, so maybe he was out and just really jonesing for a pack of Marlboro Lights, you know, and maybe that was part of it. But here's the other part of my adventure here. So I check out, and I'm walking out of the 7-Eleven, and there's a couple of people unloading boxes from this truck. It looks like they had met at the 7-Eleven, and you're transferring boxes over to whatever. And the guy gets the box out, and he walks in front of me, and I let him pass. And as he's walking by me, and I'm like, come on, man. What are we doing? Can we care about other people for, like, 2 seconds? Come on.
How are we going to get this message through, John? How are we going to, right here, right now, how are we going to tell people that you are acting like a savage group of Neanderthals
right.
who have not had the opportunity to, I don't know, talk to another human in 2 weeks or see anything on television.
Yeah.
See anything, hear anything that says, get the F away from me.
Right. It's just common courtesy, dude. I don't know what's going on. People live under a rock. So I would think that those two people are clearly jerks in my mind. But I have a scenario which I don't know who the jerk is. And that would be this story with James Franklin. Of course, Penn State football coach was talking to, I don't know what the local paper was out there in Penn State. I got this from USA Today. But talking about his quarantine life as a head coach. And an excerpt of the story is that he works out at his condo's gym. And I've got a nice little condo gym as well. It's actually pretty good in terms of the size. It's actually as big as a lobby out here at Lotus, which is pretty good. Free weight section, cardio section, everything. I would assume wherever James Franklin lives on his sort of contract that it's a pretty good condo gym. But apparently he lifted, like I should say, because of course you lifted, he stole a set of 25-pound dumbbells from the condo gym because there's just one dude who dominated the free weights for like 3 hours, and he took them home. And the guy actually left the note angrily asking who stole the 25-pound dumbbells, to which Franklin responded with another note saying, "You dominate the area, and if you don't, I'll return them."
I got a pretty clear answer on who the jerk is here, and this one's not difficult for me.
It's Franklin.
James Franklin next year will make $5.4 million.
Right.
Order the whole damn set of free weights. I don't care where you keep them. Pay for another storage unit. Buy your own gym. Seriously, dude. Seriously. Now, in a normal situation, who's the guy who goes to the condo gym and spends 3 hours in front of the free weights?
Right.
Really, honestly now. Like, but in today's world where, you know, we're all trying to not touch each other's stuff in the first place, $5.4 million.
Right. Like, or buy one of those, you know, they have the dumbbell sets where you can adjust the weights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they go up to like 35, 40 pounds. The one of them, I think, at Target is $25. So you can, I think,
and you know what, James Franklin, go get a red card. You'll get 5% off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. See?
And you can get the cool little app that gives you like multiple other discounts and coupons as well.
Just scan your wallet right there at the register. Get your discounts, get your everything. Then you can save, and you can only spend $5.3 million.
Yeah, I thought, and now I kind of understand, like, because it's, you know, the quarantine, gyms are closing all around the country, right? We know the local gyms here have all been closing down. Some still charging people, despite that. We won't name names. So I kind of get where people are going to the condo gym, and maybe it's a little bit more crowded than usual, which kind of works against the whole quarantine thing, right? But like, I feel like Franklin's the jerk, but they're both jerks. Because we all know that one gym guy who not only hoards the free weights, but screams with every single rep as he's trying to curl out, like, you know, his last set, really working it.
And you know what he's doing with that weight as soon as he's done with the last rep, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whoosh, bang.
Dropping it.
Straight to the floor. Everybody's going to look around. And, of course, what's he going to be doing as soon as you drop it? You're going to see him going, and just stretching the arm out so you get look at what he was doing.
You working out?
Oh, yeah, I mean, look at this. Like, what is the Urban Dictionary opposite of swole? Because that's me.
I don't know. I would, like, say limp, maybe?
There's a connotation there, sir, but yeah, okay, all right.
These are trying times. We have to work together. We got to work hand in hand. Kind of like what Major League Baseball and the Players Association did, right?
We have to work 6 feet away
and imagine
our hands being in someone else's hands, right? Don't work hand in hand.
And Major League Baseball did that. Apparently, they were on a conference call with about 80 players, and we have a somewhat of a deal here how Major League Baseball is going to handle this COVID-19 stoppage. This is reported from Jeff Pass and ESPN, now multiple spots, that the MLB and MLBPA agreed to some terms here with the stoppage. Among those, like kind of the keys here, they have an eye on returning to training camps mid-May, starting games early as June. That's even if they play in front of no fans. Players are going to receive a full year of service time, which is massive. Counts days towards free agency, arbitration, pension, even in the event of a canceled season. And keep in mind your key free agents this year, Mookie Betts, JT Realmuto, Marcus Stroman. So this seems, and you sent this over too, that was my first thought. I thought the players came away with this one in a really good spot, considering all the details out of this.
All we heard about in the last labor deal was just how badly the players got screwed, right? Tony Clark let them down. And there are a lot of pieces of that deal that did not work out in the players' favor. I mean, look at free agency last year and how many guys were sitting on the sidelines, some waiting until June because it was cheaper for the teams to sign them that way in terms of draft pick compensation, what they would have to spend. This is the opposite, man. To get a full year of service time in a year when there is absolutely no guarantee that anyone's getting on the field, period, I mean, a guy like Mookie Betts is going to go straight to free agency at that point.
Yep.
And he is going to make out so well. I realize that the owners probably felt some pressure here. They probably felt like they were PR-wise over a barrel, way worse than normal, right? And right. they had to concede a bit. But if you only got that year of service time, as opposed to the other things that I know you're talk about in there, I still think it would be a win.
And think about this, too, like from that standpoint, because that was my initial thought, too. In terms of negotiations, this was always going to work, I thought, in the player's favor. Because if you look at it in just its simplest form, it's employees asking how they're going to handle, asking their employer how they're going to handle a work stoppage and how they're going to take care of them as a group in terms of their employees. So it was, I thought it was always going to look a little bit worse for Major League Baseball to go, now we're not going to move on anything, right? And keep in mind, as we know, this is a league who will keep you in the minors for an extra 2-3 weeks, whatever it is, so they can get that extra year of time out of your contract. You know they didn't want to give this up, obviously. But they were in such a tough spot from the optics of being the league who goes, no, we're not budging on this, right? We'll sit here and we'll refuse to pay you whatever it is, but we want it our way. They were in a tough spot the entire way around.
No question about it. And we can make a real-world comparison here, right? Like, there are a lot of people in Nevada here in Vegas who work for the state or who work for the school district, and they have to build up time toward their pension. So right now, if you're not working, if you're stuck at home, if you're a teacher, like, are you building time toward your pension or are you not? It's the same sort of thing. Are you getting that credit when you're not actually doing the job, but you know what? You're being prevented from doing the job by forces far greater than you.
And this is the thing, and this is going to be kind of a theme through the show because we're going to hear from Kirk Herbstreit as well with his thoughts on just football in general, college football season, the NFL season. Are we sure we're having a baseball season? Because Passan came out with some of the details, too, about what they agreed upon in terms of the 2020 Major League Baseball season. According to Passan, players in the league, agreed that the 2020 MLB season won't begin until there are no bans on mass gatherings that limit the ability to play in front of fans. I think that's massive because I don't think you're going to see that for a long time. There are no travel restrictions, and medical experts determine games will not pose a risk to health of teams and fans. It sounds like they're stuck on, we got to play in front of fans. That's big. Because I'm not sure if you're going to get the clearance for that for if there's some projections that it's going to be 12 to 18 months.
And you and I are going to talk about this later in the show with what's going on in China in terms of basketball, what the NBA is looking at doing. And they've made clear that they're seriously considering options without fans. And I think that's the only way you're going to get these games going quickly, right? There's no way that you're going to be able to say within the next, let's say, 2 months, oh, it's totally safe to have a gathering of more. I mean, we're down to, in Nevada, 10 people.
Right.
Saying 10 people. So what are you going to do? Could they potentially figure out a way to keep people apart inside a stadium? Maybe.
Right.
Maybe,
like, there's a way to. Every 2 seats, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, make it like the White House press room. We're looking at the briefing right now, right? Like, people are forced to sit a certain distance apart. But I just don't think Major League Baseball, if we're to believe what's being reported today, is going to go for half measures, right? They're looking for the whole thing. And if that's the case, I have to think that we're not getting a baseball season.
You got to think that if they read the room and they realize at one point, let's say when we get to June, we can come back, but it can't be in front of fans, that they'll go back to negotiating and realize that we should do this without the fans. I think that's, like, I was surprised when Passan came out with that. I was like, you're really putting yourself in a small box. Like, everything has to be perfect by midsummer. And we have NHL, we have events being canceled in June, right? And you're sitting here saying, yeah, we're hoping to get started by mid-June and we want to play in front of fans.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. Open for golf has already been pushed back, and that was already, you know, mid to late June. So, yeah, you're definitely looking that far out on the calendar. The other thing is, basically, baseball is uniquely set up with its digital product and the way that it has the ability to stream its games. They give fans away from the stadium a very good experience watching the game, so you can still deliver a really good product to people at home.
It's Adam Candy. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. We're filling in for Steve Cofield out. Apparently, doing a fantasy baseball draft. So we just talked about how the season might not even go down.
I know. I had a league that forced us to draft, and I'm like, dude, guys, why?
Really?
Yes.
I was in one, too, and luckily cooler heads prevailed, and we postponed it until further notice.
Well, you know what? That was an NL-only league, and someone spent a bunch on Noah Syndergaard, and sorry about that.
That sucks. What doesn't suck, just a heartwarming moment from earlier today on the Today Show, Drew Brees. We're going to talk about this. The guy, as we know, is a true saint, but just this morning, my heart melted. I cried.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600. It's Cofield and Company.
Boston, we are done with the investigation. There's been a delay in terms of producing a written report just because I frankly have not had time to turn to it with the other issues.
Understood.
But we will get a Boston report out before we resume play.
Red hot flame, I'm a pretty woman lover, I'm an ugly woman's dream, baby.
Rob Manfred. Talking about, you know, this quarantine life. Got no time. All I'm doing is sitting at home, you know, doing nothing. I got no time to deal with this. Can't put out that Red Sox report because I found something extremely damning and I don't want to put it out at this point right now. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Cofield. Cofield off doing, I think, better things. Adam Candy alongside as well. So we usually do this, I think, every day, and I'm terrible at it. The good news, right? What do they call it, Ari? Good news story of the day, or what is it?
It's the good times with Mr. Sunshine.
Good times with Mr. Sunshine. So Sunshine's not here, Steve Cofield. I used to be a DC and the Sunshine Man listener. That's how old Steve is.
That's some old school right there.
Right,
I love it.
Right? Yeah. Now they're my equals. So this is the good news. The Sunshine whatever. What is it again?
Good times with Mr. Sunshine.
Good times with Mr. Sunshine. So I'm not very good at this. I will say this. I finally cracked. I saw this moment on the Today Show, right, with Hoda Kotb. Did I say that right?
Yeah, close enough.
Okay. So as we know, Drew Brees, and the guys talked about it yesterday, Drew Brees donates the $5 million to the state of Louisiana. An awesome, awesome gesture. We'll get to the ramifications of that because obviously there is a push against, you know, rich people and billionaires and kind of get it. But it was a great moment after she's done interviewing Brees where she goes to the tees and Hoda is just overcome with emotion today. And it was a good, genuine moment that you don't really see a lot of.
I also think a lot of things are contagious, including generosity. So our hope is that because, you know, you let us know that you made this big, generous donation, I think other people look and say, hey, maybe I can help out too. Drew, we love you.
Love you too, Hoda. Okay. Thank you.
All right. A lot more.
Oh, Hoda. I know. It's a lot.
Sorry.
Hoda, I'm so sorry, hon. Take a moment.
Sorry.
It's a lot. I know where your heart is, my dear. I do. How about I read the tees?
You yes, want me please.
To? Okay. Okay. Deep breaths.
Okay. So that's a genuine moment. She's overcome with emotion. It's a great deed that Drew Brees did. There's a lot to get into. One, immediately right off the bat, Adam Candy, not a fan of the segue.
And by the way, you know what else is contagious? No. Stop yourself right there. I'd be crying
if I had
said that.
I thought it was clever.
Oh, it's clever in a Family Guy kind of way, right? Like that's something you expect to hear out of Peter Griffin's mouth, right? Hey, you know what else is contagious? Like that's not Hoda.
I thought it was good. I laughed because, and I'm sorry, but I don't know her co-host at the time who was, you know, joining in via satellite.
I believe it's Savannah Guthrie.
Just sitting there and going, oh. And then after 15 to 20 seconds, she realizes, hey, you want me to do the tease? And she's like, Hoda's like, yeah, please. I'm kind of breaking up here a little bit. I can't do this anymore. Can you take it away? It was a good moment, though. I thought it was heartwarming. I usually have like a very cold heart. I thought the Imagine video with all the celebrities was garbage and should have been shot into the sun immediately. This was a good moment. I actually kind of liked this.
There's no way to put a negative spin on Drew Brees and $5 million of donation, right? Like,
that's nuts,
like that has to trump everything else in the situation.
People
right?
find a way, right, immediately with the, you signed a whatever million-dollar contract. It's all he's going to give. I saw today, actually, Mark Zuckerberg, right, put in, he's part of like a fund, I think it's like with Bill Gates. I'll look up the details there are if you can find it. It just popped up a couple hours ago. It's in the range of, I think, like $25 million of, you know, taking care of people doing this sort of thing. And a former Deadspin writer retweeted, it's like, this is 0.25% of Zuckerberg's net worth. And it's like, okay, yes, that's true and factual, but he's clearly doing something. What does he need to do, right? It's ridiculous. And people will try to find a way to ruin it. And I'm with you. You generally can't do it. What is it?
$25 million.
Right, yeah. So his
initiative to give.
And his wife, Chan Zuckerberg, initiative to give $25 million to fight COVID-19. And former Deadspin writer, not really much of his net worth. We do this all the time. Mike Florio took this in a different direction, which I thought was pretty interesting. So he actually tweeted out and retweeted the video of Hoda getting a little emotional. Says, does Drew Brees' donation mean billionaires are essentially obligated to donate, quote, at least that much? Headline, NFL owners should be writing big checks to aid with COVID-19 reliefs. Mentioned Drew Brees' donation of $5 million and that these billionaires should be giving at least $5 million. Says, if Drew and Brittany Brees can write a $5 million check, and they surely blinked at least once or twice when doing so, every other NFL owner should be donating at least $5 million each. Is that fair of him? I feel like that's not fair of him to ask that. I get that they can probably afford it, and it's kind of weird to maybe stick up for billionaires, but I also feel like it's very unfair to look at the generosity of Drew Brees and go, all right, all of you other rich people, it's on you now. At least that much. Let's go.
It kind of reminds me of, you ever go to one of those charity events where they have a live auction and right. they got some expensive item up there and they're really trying to get the rich people to bid up, right? Like, oh, he's bidding 5,000. Come on, can I get 10,000 out of you? Come on, let me get 10,000 out of you. And then they decide like, hey, you know what? We got enough prizes to go around. Let's both do 10,000. Come on, what do you say? That's kind of how it feels like Florio egging them on in a way. Like, I'm not saying that there's a required amount for donation. Anybody who chooses to do something, it's fantastic, right? I don't care if you give a dollar, you give $1 million or $5 million. But it is kind of weird to me to be sort of pushing people by saying, well, look at what he did. Because the opposite of look at what he did is what you just talked about with the Deadspin writer, which right. is, oh, yeah, look at what he did. And I don't think either of them are right.
So and I think it's kind of a, I don't know if it's a slippery slope, but do I then go look up Mike Florio's net worth and then other people that have a similar net worth and go, okay, they donated this much. Mike Florio, how much are you donating?
Set the standard, right?
Right.
What's the standard? Is the standard 1%? Is the standard 2%? And you have X amount of dollars in the bank? Like, so you know what? Go ahead and just take my stimulus check. You hang on to that. You go do something better with it.
Estimated net worth in 2019 for Mike Florio, $1 to $5 million.
Oh, God. You know, I'm not here to judge anybody else and their salary they make, but my goodness gracious, where did I go wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, Mike Florio. Okay. All right. I'm going to need a minute.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're excited here on Cofield & Company. It's essentially destroying the Choose Your Fate at Four. So we have the 64-team NBA King of the Hill one-on-one tournament bracket that we can discuss. But we're not done with the NBA. Las Vegas clearly is going through a difficult time at this point. The closure of casinos. We're in a weird spot with the lack of tourism filling our city, obviously at a time where we would have really expected it during March Madness. Could there be something coming to save our city? We'll talk about that next.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
You know, you keep hearing Las Vegas pop up like that's the only option. And, you know, you look at the John Hopkins, coronavirus map.
It's Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota Studios.
Vegas is not as hard as hit. Nevada in general is not hard hit. So do you consider moving a tournament out there to finish your season just to crown a champion?
So if you got that CV, they gonna find you. If you coughing, I ain't trying to be around you.
The voice of Jabari Young, CNBC, talking about a potential plan for the NBA to resume their season. So the NBA, Adam Candy here. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Steve Cofield. Report has come out, and CNBC talking to anonymous sources. There are discussions among the association executives that one of the plans that they could use to bring back the NBA is playing at neutral sites, and one of the specific sites that has emerged as the best location to resume the season is Las Vegas. Now, the initial thought would be T-Mobile? No. From July 10th to the 20th, as we know, Summer League is out here every single year. They have that space rented out already. Clearly seems like the Summer League is not going to go down as planned. The thought is that they would have this event at the Cox Pavilion and at the Thomas and Mack Center. Now, this is nothing official like whatsoever. There's also been reports that the LVCVA or however, whatever the acronym is, has not been reached out to by the association at all about this. This is just, again, I think NBA executives throwing stuff to the wall, see what's going to stick, and you got to cover all your bases. But the NBA bringing it back, playing a postseason tournament on a neutral out here in Las Vegas. Initial thoughts?
I love it. That's a fantastic idea. And not just like, yay, Vegas, because we're here, but because of the infrastructure, right? Like, what do you want? You want to have easy access for whatever fans you're going to choose to bring in, right? You have the arena booked. You've got the big floor with T&M. You've got the small floor, which, frankly, we all know, Cox can become a fantastic atmosphere during Summer League, right? Like, you pack that gym. It's awesome in there. And so you can have two gyms running simultaneously. Everybody already knows how to do it, right? And the basketball world is already accustomed to meeting here at that time. Like, you're not really changing anybody's plans. You're just changing what it is and building the scale. Assuming that the hotels are open, you've got the ability to take everyone in. Like, there are so many things about this that make sense. And I know you were talking about the LVCVA and Steve Hill saying, well, they haven't reached out. But the other piece of the quote was like, but we're happy to talk about it, right? Like, they'd be more than happy to have that discussion. And, I mean, are you on board, man? Because I think this is a great idea.
Oh, I'd totally be on board. And I'd be on board regardless of fans being able to attend or not. And I think that, like, that's a massive question to me, because it seems like we talked about Major League Baseball. They put themselves in a hole by saying, we're only going to do this if we can play in front of the fans, reportedly from Passan. If you're going to do this at Cox and at T&M without fans, you can obviously still pull it off. You'll get a little bit of a, you know, an influx in the economy regardless, because you will get all the NBA, you know, essentials out here, right? Whether it's the players, executives, media members, things like that. You'll get a little bit of a bump in the in travel and tourism because they all have to come here at some point. I'm just curious of, I don't think this will be, hey, everybody, it's all over with. Let's go out to Las Vegas and celebrate. Now, there's obviously clearly a chance it could be, right? Because, again, all of this is unknown. Whether or not this, you know, we have reached our peak or not here, which it doesn't seem like we have, and whether or not they're going to clear travel by the time we get to mid-July, everything is an unknown. How great would it be if everything clears by that time and it's, hey, no holds barred, everybody, let's go out to Las Vegas and let's have this tournament. But at the same time, if that is the case, would they still be having it on a neutral? Right? Like, if everything's cleared out, and I get it, every state is different. You heard in the clip of Jamari Young that Nevada's not as hard hit. Last check of the update from the CDC, we have about 530 cases here in Nevada, and they have been deemed to at least been, they know where they're all coming from. It hasn't been widespread like in New York or other states. It seems to have been contained to a certain extent. We know where they all are coming from, but I just wonder how much of a positive effect this will have for the most part. But I'd be down with it. Regardless, if this were to happen, I would be down with it because, selfishly, as an NBA fan, it would be something to watch even if you can't be there.
And I think even beyond that, right? Yeah. Beyond, hey, I love the NBA and I want this to happen. And even beyond, yeah, Vegas, I just look at it from a practical point of view and think, yeah, you can try to put this on somewhere else. You can try to do this in another spot.
Right.
But you already know how to do it here. And what's going to be of the essence is simplicity. You need to already know what your infrastructure is and what you can do in terms of trying to put the whole league in one place at one time. Now, to what you just said, yeah, I'm probably getting a little bit ahead of myself talking about fans, right? I mean, if I'm saying that, you know, hey, Major League Baseball is saying, you know, we're not going to play till fans can come in, and talking about how June is not really a possibility for that, then July is probably not really a possibility for the NBA either. But yeah, the shot in the arm would obviously be enormous. And you know what, right now, man, if nothing else, I'm glad we can have a discussion about this and talk about potential options to have that little bit of hope hanging out there right now. Is it realistic? Who the hell knows what's realistic? 3 weeks ago, this didn't seem realistic. So at least we can have a discussion about this and talk about, hey, here's what the future might look like.
And look, I'm a big fan of Brian Windhorst and the work that he does. And he's actually been talking about this for, I would say, over a month now, because I listen to the podcast and I ingest a lot of NBA content. There is kind of a model here for the NBA to follow. And that would be in China with the Chinese Basketball Association. The Chinese Basketball Association cut their season, just like the NBA did, back on January 24th during their scheduled Lunar New Year break. And they're in the process of trying to get their league started back up, even to the point where they've actually recalled American players, Jeremy Lin, Lance Stephenson. They've all returned, and they're quarantined for 14 days, as they've done in China. But they're starting to kind of get this back on track. But there's also still speed bumps in getting this back. They wanted to come back first week of April. They've now since bumped that back to April 15th. They fear that there might be a resurgence, of course, in the virus, which if you if you read reports and research, usually with pandemics, yeah, there's ebbs and flows, and there's usually three ebbs, and usually the peak is probably going to be in the middle, in the worst one, and then you have one more before it, you know, dies out. And so they're worried about that. Their initial plan over in China, kind of similar to what we're talking about here, is essentially drawing up clustering teams in one or two cities and playing one another in a round-robin format in empty arenas over several weeks. They have 16 games left in their regular season. So it kind of sounds a little familiar. Even the NBA, part of one of their plans was something similar where not even just Las Vegas, but clustering these teams somewhere in the Midwest because the Midwest doesn't seem to be as hit as hard and having them just play out whatever they're going to do in those arenas. But there is a model for this. And I think if you're an NBA fan, if you're a sports fan, you watch what they're doing with the Chinese Basketball Association, it's going to give you an idea of, one, how long, and two, what exactly the process could be.
I think the Windhorst article brings up some really interesting points that go beyond the basketball part, right?
Right.
When you look at what they're talking about doing in China in terms of monitoring the players, in terms of the fact that they're saying, we're going to take the player's temperature multiple times per day. They're basically saying, we're going to watch them like hawks. We're going to see if anybody is anywhere, you know, close to being a potential positive and getting them out of the way. And I think there's probably a model somewhere in there for not just the clustering part, but for what it's going to look like when we eventually get American sports back, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think it's going to look like this when we're monitoring players when the games eventually come back. I think this idea has a lot of potential, but you just talked about it was April 1st, now it's April 15th. We're going to have to get used to this.
Right.
Right. Like, we are just going to have to get used to the uncertainty of, yeah, we said it was going to restart. Oh, nope, sorry. We got to push it back a week, a month, whatever it is, because this virus doesn't move in a linear fashion, right? And the sooner we start pushing ourselves back into society and saying, you know what, we got to get back to normal again, that's when that second wave is going to start up again from everything that I read, is when we try to, you know, get people back out in society again, and we can't risk that second wave shutting things down again after they try to open up, because what if sports contributes to that? What if putting people in a crowd contributes to that? What if having players together contributes to that?
Right, and that's part of the worry for me, too, is, I mean, and I guess, right, there's opposite sides on this in terms of the tourism and shutting down Las Vegas, and people are unhappy about it. I wonder if it comes to, hey, let's start to open the doors a little bit and bring people back, like, do we want that? Do we want to risk bringing in, you know, tourism and more people and having this outbreak get a little worse? Because I think, just reading a lot of the numbers around our country, that we've been somewhat fortunate in Nevada that we're kind of on the lower end of the spectrum in terms of total cases.
I mean, we right now have been able to keep that number down largely because we've been so aggressive in saying, all right, we're shutting down the casinos, we're shutting down non-essential businesses, gatherings of no more than 10 people. I mean, Governor Sisolak has been right out front in terms of the governors in this country, in terms of trying to push this thing down. Now, the flip side to that is, according to CNBC last night, Nevada is second in the country behind only Rhode Island in new unemployment claims over the last couple of weeks. So when you have the main industry in your city, 250,000 people are somehow connected to tourism in Las Vegas. 100,000 work on the strip, according to UNLV. So if 10% of the people who live in your city are dependent on one area of the economy, then the question is just an impossible one in terms of, do you want people to come back, right?
Right.
At some point, I don't want to say you take the chance, but at some point, this is going to become such a consideration for Las Vegas that I wonder if we're going to throw the doors open at some point. I don't know if anybody's going to come.
Right. And the last one on that, too, is just from the NBA's perspective. You know, I was talking about this the other day with somebody. Just because you test negative, when you test negative, obviously still means that you can get it. You just don't have it at that point. So you also run the risk of still spreading this among your players, right? Like, we talked about this actually last week, Cofield and I, the controversy of healthy NBA players getting tests when people who needed them could not get access to them, right? And celebrities are also in the forefront. I know Idris Elba, when he wasn't showing symptoms, he still tested positive for it. And people were asking, well, if you weren't showing symptoms, why were you getting a test? And it's the same thing. So are you going to test a bunch of healthy NBA players and media members and NBA executives and make sure they're clear and then bring them out here? Right? Because that's also a question of morality and if the NBA is willing to do that. And I know they go through private doctors, but the optics of that aren't very good either.
Well, the optics are terrible. And all you have to do is go on social media and check out what's going on in places like New York right now in the emergency rooms, where you know they're having the discussions of, well, if we don't have enough ventilators, who gets care, right? And that's just based on society and normal life today, and you know, however you feel about what we've done in terms of social distancing and getting protective equipment for doctors out there. But sports can't contribute to that. Sports can't put that in jeopardy any more than entertainment or movies or plays or concerts or anything like that can put that in jeopardy. It's not essential. As much as we make our living in all of this, then we also realize this is not essential. It's not anything that takes precedence over what's going on in the world.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. Now, back to Cofield and Company.
Don't tell these dirty media motherfuckers anything. Tell them nothing. These scumbags will be all over you trying to, you know, shut your down immediately.
My Corona, stop it. Don't be manic. Go inside. No organic. Oh, no. All GMO.
Dana White seems like he's saying this pretty well. They're trying to trying to shut you down. Not like, you know, CDC guidelines or things like that. It's the media. Media shut down Italy and China. I think it's in Spain now. Ireland, I think, shut down today, too. That media, man. That dirty media.
You know who always wants the economy to shut down? Media, because they have the most secure jobs of everybody.
That's right. Dana White, not very happy. I wonder how he's spending his quarantine time. So I asked you, obviously you've been in more, as have I. I haven't really left the apartment other than essential things. What has gone on in the home other than work? You know, you and I are lucky enough to work from home. What have you been doing in the free time?
Yeah, my like 8 to 5 hasn't really changed a whole lot. That's what I've tried to talk to people about, other than the fact that, you know, yeah, I'm not going out to lunch. But I happen to move within the past month. And so anytime I think about sitting down and firing up some show that I never got a chance to binge, I look around and I'm like, oh, God, there are more boxes.
Oh, you're still unpacking it.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Like, I am still in the process of, the last couple of nights, I was building a desk. Like, I really want my home office to get finally set up. And so, you know, obviously I'm not paying for anybody else to come into my home. Like, I might have thought about, you know, grabbing a handyman and being like, you know what, dude, I just don't feel like doing this. Cause it was about a 5-hour process by the time I got it all done. But I'm like, what else do I have to do right now?
Zero. I'm pretty militant when it comes to putting stuff together. I will sort the screws. So I'll put all the same screws together straight. You know what I mean? I'll group them all together so I know where they're at. I'll have the instructions laid out. I'm really like mildly OCD when it comes to certain things, and putting desks together and the screws and things like that. I always have to have them organized and straight like that together. I don't know why.
I actually got to have a little bit of a sports flashback doing this, because yes, we operated this the same way. The lady friend came over and gave me some assistance with this. And she's the one who's really got the like fully organized brain. And so we went into the cupboard, and I've got all these. I got like 3 cups from Golden Knights games, 1 from the 98 World Series, all these big plastic cups. And we're like, yep, that's as good as anything for organizing all this stuff. And really, thank goodness we did, because I can't tell you how many of those things looked exactly the same. Oh, the 3/4-inch bolt versus the 1-inch bolt, but they're exactly the same.
So I've been up in the, I have like this catalog of like video games that I have purchased but never finished. So in the free time, I'm trying to go through those, finish those. I'm trying to win you'll like this. I'm trying to win an NBA title with the New York Knicks. I took over as GM. I usually I like to take over as the worst team and see if I can lead them to victory. We destroyed the Bulls the other day, like by 40 points. My game is really simple, Adam. It's defense and get out in transition. 5 rebounds, you're out and running. It's going really well. We're 1-3.
So basically you're running 8 seconds or less with the Knicks.
That's right.
Okay. Yep. And is
RJ Barrett seems to be the hit. Seems to be the answer.
Is there an ownership mode in which at some point James Dolan will fire you for no reason?
No,
like, does the game just shut down at some point and then you can't play it for 3 days because James Dolan let you go?
You do get to meet with the owner, but it's like a generic avatar. It's
James Dolan is a generic avatar of a human being, so that kind of works out well.
So I'm passing my time very well, I think. Certain people are not. Celebrities seem to be kind of going crazy with this whole thing, being stuck at home, not being able to be out and be celebrities. Bob Dylan is technically a celebrity, I think, still, right? A very well-known artist. I just sent this over with what the bleep is Bob Dylan doing with his time. He decided to release a 17-minute song today. And you're like, oh, wow, 17-minute ballad. You know, there's a lot going on in the world. I'm sure it's really recent. I'm sure it has a lot to do with what we're going through in our current time. It's about the JFK assassination. Fire it.
'Twas a dark day in Dallas, November 63. A day that will live on in infamy. The day that they killed him, someone said to me, son, the age of the Antichrist has just only begun.
Air Force One. This is awful. Look, I'm not a Bob Dylan fan. I couldn't tell you one song that he's written or sung. That sucked. What's going on?
All right, so I'm the tail end of the generation that might have been Bob Dylan fans, and let me go ahead and put this straight up onto our very well sanitized desk here. I don't get it. I've never gotten it. I don't enjoy the music. I don't get it at all. And this becomes the WTF. Like, I don't understand. Maybe he was watching, you know what? Now I think about it. Maybe he was watching the History Channel. Maybe he's just stuck in this house right now watching the History Channel, and, you know, a 2-hour documentary came on. He's like, well, sure. I guess I could write about that.
He's like, it's never gotten enough coverage. The assassination of JFK.
You got to write what you know, right? Like, you got to go into your wheelhouse, right? So, I mean, I don't think he's gonna be writing something about hip hop feuds.
The lyrics are on point. It happened so quickly, so quick by surprise, right there in front of everyone's eyes. Greatest magic trick ever under the sun, perfectly executed, skillfully done. Wolfman, oh Wolfman, oh Wolfman howl, and this is an actual lyric. Rub a dub dub, it's a murder most foul.
That's the name of the song.
Murder Most Foul, right?
Yep, yeah. The 17-minute song.
And I think you'll appreciate this, Ari. I never want to hear one old head ever talk about hip-hop in the lyrics. Because if you're out there, and I saw people on Twitter, what a ballad by Bob Dylan. This was garbage.
If any hip-hop artist today threw rub-a-dub-dub
right
over some right over a beat, you would hear nothing but old screaming.
He totally didn't know what to do with that last line. He's like, I got to fill in like 6 syllables here. What do I do?
Could just make it 16 and a half minutes, maybe.
Rub-a-dub-dub. It's a murder most foul.
I got nothing, man. Like, I don't know how to add to that because I don't want to add to it because...
Now,
I don't. I just
genius.com, which like does a great job of like, you know, analyzing lyrics and giving you meanings for things, tried their best and said that although a famous nursery rhyme, this is likely a reference to Rub-a-Dub-Dub, a country song by Hank Thompson. The song touches on themes of betrayal and loss. I don't think Bob was thinking that deep.
He wrote the song in the bathtub. He wrote the song in the bathtub watching the History Channel. Come on. Why are we looking for hidden meaning? Are we going to play the vinyl backwards? Stop it.
17 minutes.
I'm not going to hate on 17-minute songs, though. As someone who, in college, made my way through college DJing classic rock, prior to things being readily available for Postmates delivery, et cetera, the only way I could make it down to Denny's on the overnight was if I put on the live version of Inagata DeVita.
Okay.
Got in the Geo Metro, zoomed down the hill.
But that was to serve a personal.
Picked up my Denny's and made it back while that was still on. So, I mean, I don't know. Is 17 minutes about Bob Dylan? Maybe his purpose is to help people who are insomniacs?
That was to serve a purpose, though. Like, for me, my limit on songs is like 7.5 minutes.
That's very specific. That's very specific.
I mean, like, so, like, is it the Kanye song? Like Monster's like 7.5 minutes. There's a couple of Queen songs that are like 7.5 minutes. But, like, I'm in that range.
But they go places. Like, this is just, I was skimming through it just to see if there was some kind of, you know, exciting part, and it just keeps going the same way. 17 minutes
and one take. That's it. Bob was out.
Oh, one take. Right. Definitely one take. Please.
Absolutely.
Let's not even bring the word editing up here.
All right. Second hour of the program. On the other side, you have chosen your fate. The people have spoken. I am going to finish out this bracket. I have chaos in both the Giannis region and the Harden region. We'll tell you what that is when we return here on Cofield & Company.
Finley Toyota. They'll do anything to sell you a car. No Toyota problem is too tough, too large, or too small. Keep your Toyota running like a Toyota.